let's get going. Okay, we saw the Rashi's approach last time to Tam Ki Ikar, that Tam Ki Ikar is only Midrabanan, and we saw all the moving parts to his Shita, right? We saw that the Gemara in Heter Mitzdareif L'Isur, in Divrei Rava, Lo Nitzracha Ela L'Tam Ki Ikar D'Bekodshim Aser, so he answered, but the Cholin Mutter, right? So it's not, right? And then we saw, and also another proof for him, the Divrei Rabbi Yochanan, Tamo Veloma Mosho Aser Ve'Ein Lokin Olav. On the other hand, we're going to start today with the Rosh, and just get the other side, Rabbeinu Tam and Rabbeinu Chaim, who make their way through the Rashba to the Beis Yosef, to the Shulchan Aruch, and that's where our halacha will be formed. So if you don't mind, let's turn today to Perikita Nasha and the Rosh. It's Siman Lamed Aleph, and it's the Dapei Arosh, it's Daf Kuf Pei Aleph Amud Beis. Sorry? No, just we're gonna look. These are easy. Okay? So if you turn with me here, it's on page 362 in your prayer books, and it's in the left column, about halfway down. Okay? Uperish Rabbeinu Tam. The Tam Ki Ikar, right? Everybody have that spot? Okay? If you find it, Yoel, you want to read? Okay.
Here's Rabbeinu Tam, the Tam Ki Ikar of the nature of the Shainam, you know, the right?
So obviously it doesn't hold like Rashi. Let's see where he gets it.
The Tam Ki Ikar, how you sort of Tam the head there.
So when he means Lokina love the Kizayit, not Kizayit Isur, but Kizayit of the Heter with the Tam of the Isur in it, right? Okay, and he says the same Lashon of Nepach, right? So we're going to go a little further with this. Go ahead. So in other words, not only does this work L'chumra, but it also works L'kula, that if you had a mixture that was that had the tam of orez, if you had a mixture that had the tam of matzah, right, but it's only a rice cake, you could be yotze if the tam was the tam of matzah. Okay, go weiter. Mishras meaning mishras anavim, the pasuk by Nazir from Parshas Naso, which says that a Nazir, not only can't he eat grape products or drink wine, but he can't consume heter, non-grape products that have been soaked in wine. B'chol mishras anavim. So there, that the Gemara suggests in Perek Ve'elu Ovrin, in Sofim, around Mem Beis, Mem Gimel, around there, the Gemara suggests that pasuk is a source for the notion that the Torah says Tam Ki Ikar. Okay? And there we're talking about Midjan, of course, clay Midjan. So Torah says you have to kasher the kalim that you took from Midjan. Why do you got to kasher them? Because they cook treifas in them. Well, I mean, if you take a kli from them, it's a suffake Iser Diraisa, Tam Ki Ikar. So therefore, from the fact that the Torah commands you to do it, indication that Tam Ki Ikar, that the notion that Tam is equivalent to Isur itself, and the Tam of Isur is also Isur, comes from that requirement of the Torah to Kasher Kalim. We will, with God's help, see that in greater detail when we get to the notion of No Saint Tam Lifgam, which, by the way, we're going to do a lot of, I go through my 3x5 card box of Shilas that have been asked me over the year, and we're going to answer a lot of those Shilas. You're going to find out that one of the most operative principles Lakula in Halacha is No Saint Tam Lifgam, and that it's going to enter in a lot of Shilas and create the grounds for us to be Matir things correctly. Yes, sir.
I understand the first two examples, but the example of the Kalim of Midjan, mm-hmm, and the Tam, do you find that is there any application which you can show if they're found in the sleep? Meaning, when you have a sleep that's washed enough,
I bet that if you had a kli that had been, I bet that you could come up with a circumstance where you could taste the taste of meat in something, but I have to point out one thing. You have to know that this one would have to claim ignorance mitam midas chasidus, and let me mention why. Because they're referred to as kalim, I don't help in the kitchen at all because I just a humra of kleisha. So I don't clean up and I don't cook at all. So I can't tell you whether. But I was about to say simplistically that I assume that if you cooked with certain kalim, you would get certain tastes or flavors that would Well, there's also because there's Isur in it, right? So Isur could be Isur Hana, for instance, right? But the fact of the matter is what we're really worried about is the Platas Isur or the Tam that was Balua in the Kalim. So we do have a notion that those kalim can convey tom.
This is something that I've thought about in the past, but I think that one of the main differences between the way we do dishes today and the way we clean up after food has been cooked or in a matter that we use soap. I don't know how that would necessarily affect things also. And I said there's people that even addressed the how that actually cleans out practically pots and dishes. But I think that prior to the I don't know when they started using soap to clean things out. But that I would assume that the way they used to do it is they would use some water, maybe, I don't know if they used lye. I know the Shulchan Aruch talks about how that, if you put that in, that would be an okay time of gum. But if you would, the way they used to clean things, I mean, if you just put water into something where you put it with oil or a meat substance, you just sort of like, you know, cleaned it out, I'd say, you know, within a day later, you might be able to, I mean, it would depend on the substance, but you might be able to notice something.
And a question that you're then about to ask me is, so should all those things apply today? And I will tell you that we will definitely see in a very common question is the meat spoon put in the milchik dishwasher and washed in the same cycle with milk, milky kalim. And we'll definitely see that there's the grounds because of the soap. The soap itself is no sin tam leaf gum. So we'll generally say that we'll generally find grounds to be matir, but
so there are two types. I mean, there's regular dish soap, and then there's dishwasher detergent, which has bleach and all kinds of really.
And we were just talking before you came in about whether or not you could kosher things with bleach that would be poisonous and whatever. I see no reason why not, you know. But the fact of the matter is, I can't attest to the chemistry of it because I'll say something, and then we have people that listen to this, and somebody will listen over the. And I'll get an angry letter from a professor of metallurgical sciences at the University of Colorado, you know, blasting me and, you know, whatever. So I can't say with any great authority, but certainly the halacha respects the notion of taste conveyed through kalim.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Right. Okay. Right. And we'll encounter that notion too about Me'ushan. We'll encounter also whether or not that's Basar B'Cholov. So we're going to see that in Pei Zion with God's help. Bittul doesn't apply there. It could. You'd have to know we have a general principle which we're going to see later, which is Delo Nefak, Delo Yadin and Kama Nefak Mine. We never know how much something absorbed or how much, particularly if it had constant use. So with a new kli, we would only have to be mevatel the amount that it possibly could absorb, which would be up to 100% of what was cooked in the pot. So let's say that you cooked a small, you know, piece of meat in a pot, and it was a brand new pot. Then you can assume that the maximum that was absorbed was the volume of that piece of meat, right? So we'd want to make sure that the contents of the pot were enough to be mevatel. We're going to see in the next siman, so I don't want to give away, create a little drama. We're going to see in the next siman as to whether or not the walls of the pot itself can be mitzareif for bitul, or whether it's just the ingredients of the pot. Maybe the walls of the pot are just the medium for holding the tam, and we require that the food that's in the pot be mevatel. And that comes out of the sugya of the bones of the zroa b'sheila, which we're going to see, God willing, in the next siman. So we'll wait for that if it's okay. Yes. We haven't just, as I said, we haven't discussed that yet as to whether or not it's volume or weight. So we haven't discussed that yet. We didn't say yet how rove is either. We didn't say if it's with size or number or whatever. So I made note on Sunday that we haven't gotten to that yet, and we will get to that. But right now we're just going to assume that we have a general notion of rove, and you know, we're all the meatballs are the same size, and for the moment, we'll say it's volume. Okay? Right? Okay. So Rabbeinu Tam holds from those... Rabbeinu Tam holds from those, from the sugya in Safim, that brings those scriptural sources, that those scriptural sources are not asmachta. Therefore, then, he's got other moving parts that he has to deal with. He has to deal with the Rava, which I'm not going to do today, but he has to deal with the Rava, lo nitzurcha elo the tam kikar debekad shimaser, right? So I'm not going to do that today. If you're interested in how we're mitarets that, it's in the Tosfos there, on Tzadi Ches Amud Aleph, it's Amud Beis, it's a very long Tosfos. And, but much more is the more straightforward source of Rabbi Yochanan, because it has a halachic nafkamina. And that's called tamo velo mamasho asur ve'ein lokin alav. So what does he do with that? So continue. Now the rush wants to square that up.
Ma'iri b'min b'mino v'tamo u'mamasho ka'amar delokin haynu k'sha isur ve'ein u'makiro.
Right. Okay. So let's parse this out. Okay. So he says that the statement of kol shetamo v'loma masho ein lokin alav is a surve ein lokin alav is talking about min bimino, right? So that means that it's a special situation, and it's the ta'am is there even though it's not perceptible. Okay. So it's asur if there's, right, but it's ain lokin alav, that's only min bimino. So it's a variant of the shita of Rabbi Yehuda, which is not how we hold. So what has he done? He's effectively then, Rabbeinu Tam takes Rabbi Yochanan off the table, because he makes it an anomalous shita that's related to the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda and not one and not in the normative range. So he's dealt with that. Okay, and what does he do then with the Login Hainusha Isur Be'ein Umakiro? Tamo Veloma Masho, right?
Asur Midarabana. Ve'ein Login Alav Midaraita Beruba Batel.
Right, because it's Min Bimino. So that's how he dealt with it. Okay?
Vehu Adin Im Hayam Mamasha Isur Be'ein Velom Nimoach.
Namely, it's floating there. A little piece in the Vela.
Velom Nimoach Rach Ein Nikar Ein Login Alav Kihu Batel Vero.
Right. Even though you can't taste it, we still, if there's enough so that you are tasting it, you're tasting non-kosher meat mixed in with the taste of kosher meat, and you can't distinguish which is which, you're still deriving flavor from non-kosher, and that therefore makes Rabbi Yochanan an exceptional shita. Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
How is it possible that the case of Easter Be'ein blowing up actually in Utah? Is that possible?
It's there. You could see it, but it's a huge pot, and
you can't see it.
What? No, you could see it.
If, Be'ein, but it's not the
yeah, it's you could see it, but you don't know which one it is, and you can't really perceive it because there's a lot of other things in that pot, and you are seeing it, but you don't know which one it is, perhaps. Okay?
And I always thought that would mean that's Eino Nikar.
Yeah, Eino Nikar could also...
Right. Be'ein Nikar means you know that it's there, but you don't know which one it is?
I'm going to have to say that because he says it's Be'ein.
Okay.
right? And be'ain, we generally mean to say that you can see it. The other use of the word be'ain, which I'm going to have to think about, is that it's there mamash even if you can't perceive it. It's there in its tzura, but maybe it's so small that you can't detect it. So that could also be. Okay? Go ahead.
Mishum debayin the meimar ta'amu v'lo mamasho asur. Ve'an heichan hu asur, yichdei diyahi ta'amu v'min b'sheinu mino.
Okay, so this is Rabbeinu Tam's shita, and Rabbeinu Tam is going to be formative for us in the Mechaber, because the Mechaber is going to follow the Rashba, who is going to say we should follow the Rabbeinu Tam and the Ri, and he's going to say the Ri and Rabbeinu Tam agree with each other, and the Rabim Haim, and therefore we should follow them, and then so the Mechaber is going to say that Tam ki Ikar is min haTorah, okay, afilu b'shari suri. All right, Rabbeinu Chaim.
Rabbeinu Chaim is the alpirish, the Irish shafir b'min b'she'eno mino.
Namely, what tamo v'lo mamasho?
The tamo mamasho kari sheyesh b'zayit b'chidei achila pras. The atavik mo mamasho shel isur.
Okay, so he says that the distinction between tamo v'mamasho and tamo v'lo mamasho is just whether there's a shi'ur of kizayit b'chidei achila pras. Okay, go ahead. And that's enough. We're going to stop at that point in Rabbeinu Chaim. So what is he explains to us that Tam Ki Ikar, in the Tam Ki Ikar, he also holds that the Heter is Nepach L'Isur, but that this only happens where there's enough Isur to effect the change. And what is that shiur? That there's a kezayit b'chdei achilat pras. If you don't have that shiur, then there's no koach in the isur to transform the heter. Now, if you look in the Beis Yosef, you'll see that he writes, V'yafal pi shebishem Rabbeinu Chaim, kasav harosh, hadetamo mamasho, kari liyeshbo kezayis b'chdei achilat pras. He quotes just what we said. So the Tur assumes that Rabbeinu Chaim and Rabbeinu Tam hold the same way, and therefore Rabbeinu Chaim adds to the list of people who hold like Rabbeinu Tam. All you need to remember is that Rabbeinu Tam, for clarity's sake, that Rabbeinu Tam accepts the drushos of Mishras and Gilei Midyan, says that's what where the Gemara is specifically discussing Ta'am Ki Ikar, and that's why I'll start there. And then the other sugyas I'll explain the way I need to in order to make the system coherent. Okay? So you can have Rashi on the one hand, who takes all the sugyas that appear, and he'll explain them, you know, and he'll say simply, they're not specifically talking about Tam Ki Ikar. Tam Ki Ikar is mentioned in Gavurcha, but they seem to strongly indicate logically that Tam Ki Ikar ain't omin a Torah, so I'll take the sugya where they bring sources for Tam Ki Ikar and say it's just asmachta, right? The Rabbeinu Tam will start with the sugya that discusses specifically the source for Tam Ki Ikar, say that's the Ikar sugya, and then explain the others logically. Either way, they all have the same material in front of them, and however they paskin in Tam Ki Ikar, they got to do something with the other guy's proofs. Right? So if their proofs are contradictions to the other shita, okay? It's a pure exercise in coherent, systematic halacha, taking a group of Gemaras and trying to fit them together. Okay?
Yeah. How is that different than Bittul B'Shish Pinchas? He requires you to have a minimum amount. So if he's requiring any minimum amount in order for a Tam Ki Ikar to apply,
right.
Is that distinguished from Bittul B'Shish?
So I still need to have Shishin. I still need to have Rove to start. Then the question is whether or not there's Tam. If it's present, I can taste the tom of that item then it's usher, right? But do I get malkos for eating kezayis of that mixture? Namely, so what's the difference? The mixture of heter has the tom of So what's the strategy here? What's Rabbeinu Chaim's strategy? The mixture of heter and isur has the tam of isur in it, so it's asur, tam kikar. It's just that there's no malkos. Why is there no malkos? Because in order to have malkos for kizayis of the heter that you ate with the tam in it, there has to be enough. Right, so he says the shior, then he can have his cake and eat it too, so to speak. He can say tam ovo lo mamasho asur v'ein lokin alav. It's asur, but ain't lokin alav if you don't have that shior. Ain't lokin alav al what? Ain't lokin al the heter that you ate, because that heter doesn't become isur, right? Like first stage isur for malkos, unless there's enough of the, right? So he has his cake and eat it too. It's asur, mina torah, but ain't lokin alav. Okay, see what he's doing? Okay, so it's clever. Okay, yeah.
Do you agree with the Rishon Lakish saying that it's okay with the perfect
place? Ah, interesting you should bring that up. So, I would never be mazed to disagree on my own until I looked in the Pre-Chadash, who says that he's totally wrong and says that you can't read him that way. You see the where he says that he reads that way?
Yeah.
And I found it very problematic, quite honestly, because I... Yeah, I agree too. And I just add that the person who agrees with us to make it a shlishia is the Pre-Chadash, who says he's absolutely wrong. Okay? So when I learned it, I just puzzled over it, and then just wrote in mine Tzarich Iyun. And then the next year that I learned it, I added a gimel, Tzarich Iyun Gadol. And then I saw the Pre-Chadash, and then I saw that it's absolutely wrong, and I felt a lot better. You know? Okay? All right, so let's go a little bit further. So if we would look, if you're interested in what he does with the Rava statement about lo nitzricha, there you'll see in the Tosfos in Chulin. So how do we paskin now in Tom Kikar? Now's the time to finally open up the tour in the Shulchan Aruch. Okay. I've retired so many of these, I'm getting to the point, I already lost the back cover, that's why I have to get another one. Okay. So we'll go to Sa'if Beis. The nice thing about this edition of the tour is that it gives Sa'ifim in the tour as well. So we'll go to Sa'if Beis. How does it do the Sa'ifim in the tour? Traditional tour, the no seifim. It breaks the tour up to match with the mechaber. So it's much easier to do that. So you'll see that sometimes, if you're looking, there won't be a seif gimel or seif hey in the tour because the mechaber added a seif and didn't. Now, let's just follow exactly sort of how the literature came about. And it's probably worth your reading the late Professor Twersi Zatzal's article on the history of the Shulchan Aruch, which appears in a collection called The Jewish Expression, edited by Judah Golden, I think, or something like that. Anyway, this is, of course, Professor Twersky from Harvard, our Rav Meir Twersky Shlita's late father, okay? And he wrote an article on the Shulchan Aruch historically, which I think is worth reading, so you have an idea about all these things came about. Let's just take a step back and say the revolution that there was in Psak Halacha divorced from the Gemara. The first Sifrei Halacha that were Sifrei Halacha per se were Sifrei Monei HaMitzvahs, where they would put like the smock and the smock, etc. The Mishnah is sort of an unusual source to have Halacha, which we're going to call, we use a fancy pseudo-intellectual word called apodictic, which means divorced from the source, right? So it was an unusual source to have mamarei halacha, right, without psukim. The very first sifrei halacha are midrashei halacha, where they learn the pasuk, and then they would learn everything that there was in the pasuk. So, for instance, they learn the pasuk say, usvartim lochem shetei svira l'chol achas v'achas. Right? Mimacharasa Shabbos. Mimacharasa Pesach. Oh, I know. Mimacharasa Shabbos Mamash. Right? So you want to see the example of that style of learning. You look in the Midrashei Halacha, in the Sifra and the Sifrei, and the Mechilta. And that's the way that they would originally, apparently, learn Halacha, which be to say the Pasuk and then all Halacha on it. What happened over the course of time is that the halacha became too prodigious. Eis lachos lashem heferos orasecha. They began, they couldn't memorize the pasuk with all the Torah Shabbat Peh on it anymore, so they began to write it down. Okay? The very first independent sifrei halacha were the monei mitzvos. So you have like the Sefer Achinuch, big disagreement about who the Sefer Achinuch was, actually. You have the Rambam Sefer mitzvos, you have the Smag and the Smak, right? You have Reb Sadja, right? So you have whole series, and there you follow the order. Okay? The first Sefrei Halacha that followed the order of Shas were commentaries on the Shas, like the Rif. Right? So what the Rif would do was, he would conflate the Sugya. He would leave out things that were not Halacha, right? He would omit all the Agadata, and he would only bring the pieces of the Sugya that contribute to the final solution. A poor choice of terms. He would also bring in other sugyas from other places in Shas if you're on the topic, but largely still, you needed to know Gemara to know where to find the relevant riff. You want to know where to find about shaving on Chol HaMoed, you have to know that it's in Moed Katan. You want to know where Avelis is, you're going to have to know that it follows on that same, you know, sugya in Elu Magalchi, right? So you still had to know where things are located, what the Meiri and Rishonim call Derech HaShas, which is a sort of a Proustian, you know, recollection type method. While I'm on the topic, let me bring every Omar Rav, Yehuda Omar Rav, let me bring five other statements, Omar Rav, Yehuda Omar Rav, okay? And to bring Simonim and to associate things together, okay? Now, the Rambam was a revolution, not because, really because of the Moreh Nevuchim, but basically because of the Yad HaChazaka, because of the Mishnah Torah. And this is the idea that he makes it very clear in the Hakdama what he was trying to accomplish. He was trying to accomplish that you could learn Halacha without looking in the Gemara. Okay? He wanted to, the Gemara language, he writes, is difficult, right? And to know where things are and then I arrange topically. And the ability to learn Gemara was not as widespread as the Jewish press would have us think it was. So consequently, he wanted to make it easier, and he actually thought, in terms of Sakdama, that this Mishnah Torah might one day replace the Gemara. In study of Mishnah Torah, might one place replace the Gemara entirely. Then in one of those delicious ironies of history, the entire literature of the Mishnah Torah is to put the sources back into the Mishnah Torah, right? Say, Magi Mishnah, the Lecha Mishnah, the Kesef Mishnah. Kesef Mishnah is the Mechaber, of course, right? The Migdol Oz, hesitate to mention that name. And a whole bunch of Hagos Maimonios, right? Etc. So you have all these sources which generally have a debate, where did the Rambam get it from, right? So the apparatus or the Nosei Kelim of the Rambam re-inject the Gemara into the document. The tour began to collect along his own path sources, and he established the Arba Aturim, which are named for the jewels of the Choshen HaMishpat, so to speak, and he broke them down into four orders, and the order of Simonim, which breaking them down into, of course, Or Chaim, and Eben Ezer, and Choshen HaMishpat, and Yoredeya. Yoredeya Chelek Aleph is our Chelek. Chelek Beis includes Avodah Zorah and Ribis and Avelis and other things that don't fit into the normal. And his principle, and he had two principles of Sidur of the Torah. One is to follow the order of the day, and the other is sometimes to follow the order of the sugyos. So he will start out with, and that's why, by the way, for instance, and also conceptual order. So that's why we have Basar B'Challah before Taruvos, as I mentioned in the first meeting. Because even though it makes sense to learn all the normative things we need to know first, for Iser V'Heter, all the general principles of Bitul, etc., in Hilchos Taruvos, and then get the special instantiation of the Halacha in Basar B'Challah, he put it first because he followed a logical order. Because first he did Dvarim HaYotzi Min HaChai, that got him onto the laws of Chalav, and then while he was on it, he did Basar B'Challah. Right? So he'll sometimes, the order within a topic, so the topical orders start with Or Chaim, follow the order of the day. Right? Just like the Sidur follows the order of the day. Right? Starts out, except it starts out in the morning. Right? So it starts out and follows the order through the day. And then also follows the second principle of Tadir V'Sheino Tadir. So if you think about a traditional Siddur, you can know where to find everything by knowing that it follows the order of the day, and then where the when it has to get to non-weekday things, it does Tadir V'Sheino Tadir, and then hooks in together things that come together. So for instance, why is Ntilas Lulav in front of just before Hallel? Because people had the custom, many people had the custom not to make the Ntilas Lulav in the morning at home in the sukkah before they left, but in shul just before they made the bracha on the just before they said Hallel. That's a vestige, by the way, because it seems that the primary custom was originally to do Ntilas Lulav in the sukkah. So that's a vestige of the fact that in many communities they only had one lulav in Esrog, and people would make it when they got to shul before Hallel, so they'd have everybody pass it around. Chas v'sholom, that in Bergen County, in Englewood or Teaneck, Ir v'Ein b'Yisrael, everybody shouldn't have their own designer lulav and Esrog. Okay, it would be a terrible, terrible thing. It's a sign of status that you buy even for children that don't know Lunanea, you also buy them a lulav and an esrog. When my kid was little, he used to tell people proudly, "I went last night to Pathmark to get my esrog." Right? Because you don't have to buy a kid who doesn't know. You know, I used to give him a little lemon, you know, or whatever. You know, you don't. When a kid doesn't know the difference, right? But chas v'sholom in Teaneck, that everybody shouldn't have a designer lulav and esrog. Okay. And by the way, it's something I learned from living in Teaneck, that it's not really important that the minim not be psulim, it's important that you own the fanciest possible case to carry them in, right? So, something I also didn't know, that a silver esrog box is ma'akev, which I didn't know in Teaneck. So, okay, so I've learned a lot in my years in Teaneck.
Okay, back to the Torah. Yeah. Was the Torah criticized at all? Similar to the
no, we don't seem to find it. And by the way, the Torah is the son of the Rush. So we don't seem to find it because we already had the ability to collect halakhic opinions. That we find a lot. So he's collecting halakhic opinions, sometimes quoting the Gemara. The Torah was such an important book that the Shulchan Aruch didn't write first his own book. He wrote a commentary on it in which he brings all the sources himself and argues and goes right back to the Gemara. So the starting point, if you want to look up a halakhic topic, probably the starting point, the best starting point, is the Torah and the Beis Yosef, because the Beis Yosef will bring you the sources, and you can start from there. Okay, you were going to say something, Guy?
Yeah, I was just saying, if you get the sense that the Rambam, so you get the sense that he's writing, and it's based on his logical reading of the Mars. Also is the same sense.
Mm-hmm.
But the Mechaber, we know, is also logical in the Beis Yosef, but he's also judging by consensus.
Yes. So I'm glad you mentioned that. The Mechaber says in his Hakdama that he has the following principle that motivates his halacha. He violates it all the time, but he has the following principle that motivates his psak. And that is, he takes the three amudei halacha, the Rambam, the Rif, and the Rosh. And if any two agree, he says, Acharei Rabim La'atos, so I'm going to follow them. Now, whether he does that or not, a lot of times he gives a lot of preference to the Rashba. He gives a tremendous amount of preference to the Rambam over the Rosh, for obvious reasons.
And also to the Magid.
And, yes, well, but it doesn't really enter into Halacha very much, but, you know. You can read Professor Berblowski's book if you want on the Magid. I want to point out to you that notion of majority view is very offensive to the early critics of the Shulchan Aruch. And if you'd like to read a very strong take on it, you should look into the Mavo, I don't know if it's called a Hakdama or the Mavo or whatever, of the Yamshel Shlomo, who is very troubled by the nature that you don't paskin according to Seichel Yashar of what you see as the pshat meaning of the Gemara. You learn all the sources and you see what the halacha should be, and you should follow your mind if you're a person of authority, and you should paskin not according to precedent, according to the number of people. The only reason why we follow the number of people in these kinds of occasions, because it isn't Sanhedrin where there's actually an official vote, is because of Shikul Adas, like we said in the Akrei Rabbi Latos. We assume that if the majority of people say something, that you know it should be, you know, in the Sanhedrin it was Yachid Barabim Halacha Karabim Akrei Rabbi Latos. But here, really, it's because of a Shikul Adas. And if you look at it and you know that the halacha, you know, in quotation marks, should be otherwise, so the Yamshel Shlomo objects to the notion of a majority view. Okay, and it's a very, very powerful Hakdama. You might find it interesting. Yes?
You mentioned that the Yosef makes obvious preference
to the Rambam
over the Rush, and
why is that? For the same reason that I would have a preference for the words of the Havdil between me and the Beis Yosef, but why I would have a preference for the words of Rav Simon over the words of Rabbi Dov Linzer, right? Okay, it would be, why would I have a preference? Because I come from that Siyah, I'm in that tradition, I'm in that more of that halachic tradition. Bad example, he's in the halachic tradition, the Sephardic halachic tradition, so he'll look to the Rambam as Avi Avosa Haposkim. Okay, better answer. Okay. Not really. Okay? So he would tend to favor, who does he favor the most? The greatest posek of them all, the Rashba. By the way, you want to read Tshuvos? Classic Tshuvos? We're going to read some Tshuvos of the Rashba. Rashba is a towering figure of Yoredeya. Okay? And if you have the, you know, in-laws who are anxious to buy you a present, ask them to get you the Torah Sabayis of the Rashba in the new edition. The Moshe Rav Kook edition, which is it's a very important sefer. We're going to read liberally. We can't read the Beis Yosef without reading huge selections from the Rashba's Torah Sabayis. Okay? He's a posek of inordinate style and consistency and koach and nituach. Okay. Yeah.
I'm just curious. Like, how much weight would you give to the whole notion of the different styles coming?
Very good.
The Rashba and the Ramban coming from Andalus, Catalonia, and the people coming from southern Spain in Andalus.
So there are people that have written very eloquently. I think the late Professor Tashma supervised a couple PhD theses on these. I'll make a general, very sweeping comparison that we can see in the very first Sa'if of Shulchan Aruch here between the Sephardic halachic tradition and the Ashkenazic. And that is, you have all the Gemaras that talk about Kfela, right, in Ta'am. And the Mechaber Pasen's that way. And then how does the Darkei Moshe open up in the first, we should look at it. How does he open up in the first Sa'if? So if we just flip back to the Darkei Moshe in the very first Sa'if of Tzadi Ches. It might not be the very first, but it's right there in the beginning, where he quotes the Sefer HaGur, which I think is worth knowing who that was, too. Okay? So you look at the Darkei Moshe. So what I wanted to say is the Beis Yosef and the Mechaber and the Ramah first wrote their works as commentaries on the Torah, the Beis Yosef and the Darkei Moshe. Then later, the Mechaber collected his conclusions and rewrote them following the Seder Simanim of the Torah, and largely the Seder Seifim of the Torah, even though they weren't broken up in Seifim, and that turned out to be the Shulchan Aruch. The Ramah, who was in the process of writing his own book, then wrote his own book as Hagos or Mapa on the Shulchan Aruch of the Mechaber. Okay, so on the page here we have the precursors of the Shulchan Aruch. We have the Beis Yosef and the Darkei Moshe. So the Darkei Moshe is the Ramah, the Beis Yosef, of course, is the Mechaber. We have also the Bais Chadash, who's, by the way, for this book, Rabbi Yoel Sirkis, he's the same as the Hagos Habach. He's called the Bais Chadash because of his commentary on the Torah. The Hagos Habach, he became known by his Sefer. So it's the Hagosa Bach, had nothing to do with any kind of composer or anybody else. It's Rabbi Yoel Sirkis. He called the Sefer the Bayit Chadash, right.
And who called him the Beit Yosef?
He called him his Sefer the Beit Yosef. He called him, yeah.
He and the Rabbi okay. Are in the same
Sanhedrin. Okay. As a Kohen, I don't know if I'm allowed to know that. But in any case, the fact of the matter is, so people get known by their svarim. I have friends, I'll just say as an aside, who refer to me by the name of a Sefer which has never been written, and I'll tell you what the story is. I was once in Borough Park buying svarim at Eichler's, and somebody came in and said, can you make a minyan for a mincha? So I went to little shtiebel there to make a minyan. When I walked in, the shamash said to me, who are you? I said, my name is Elzer Glickman. He said, who are you? I said, in my name. I said, he was saying in Yiddish. I thought maybe I didn't understand it. So I said, I'm so, he says, what is dein yichus? Which I thought, well, you know, you want to know everything about my family and everything, which I thought was very inappropriate. So I told them, Ich bin nin venechet from the Dover Shkarim, which I had a friend there, which means I'm the great-grandson of the Dover Shkarim, like as if there's a book, the Dover Shkarim. So I have a friend who was with me who absolutely went nuts and began to refer to me as the Dover Shkarim, and I have a whole circle of people who call me the Nin Venechet from the Dover Shkarim. So people are always identified by their svarim and whatever. And so I'm hoping that they'll actually footnote that on the new poster that the student organization is making. They will footnote my yichus to the Dover Shkarim. Okay. No, the Vedic Abayit, yes, but we also think it's done by Talmid of the. Okay, so the latest discussion is that it was largely done by Talmid. Now, let me mention that there are places where the Beis Yosef disagrees with the Mechaber. You know, they've been collected. One of the first people that collects this is, we have a great treasure in this generation, it's Rabbi David Cohen, and he keeps notebooks, and then periodically he writes up, whenever he finds something in his learning, he finds examples, so he keeps notebooks and he publishes them. So people like him, I think he actually, I once spoke to him, and I think he once told me that he was writing down all the places. There were other people that have written down, the Yad Malachi has collected a bunch of them. There are other people that have collected them as well. The Bedek Abayis is then comes later with corrections. Some of them are done by the Mechaber, some of them are done by Talmid. They come in later. By the way, that's the case with all. There wasn't a notion of canonization in the ancient world or like final print date. So you have Rashi's Perush to Gemara is rife with additions by his Talmidim, right? It was just like a work in progress. That's why, for instance, and they didn't take it as a super commentary or a commentary or super commentary or Tosis a super commentary. They took it as an actual Pshat commentary, which is why when Rashi says Hachi Garsina, very often they change the text actually. You don't find the old Girsa in the text anymore because it says Hachi Garsina, and so Hachi Garsina, and that's what you should do, right? So the fact of the matter is there was no notion in, you know, or not as much of a notion of a fixed canon with a work. And people would actually make changes to it and make corrections and things of that sort. And that's why you'll find different manuscripts for the Rashba and the Rosh and the Ritva. And that's what led to a whole cottage industry in Israel of publishing these manuscripts of Rishonim, because they were different. They got copied and people changed them according to their own, understanding, right? And the other great influence, of course, is the Catholic Church. Not only the biggest despoiler of the Jewish community originally of manuscripts, and remains one of the largest collections of Hebrew manuscripts ever, which in the Vatican Library, which the way they got them, you can see kinos that were written when they got them, you know, like the burning of the Talmud in 1232 and things of that sort. And we honored these people by bringing them to our Beis Midrash, by the way. And the fact of the matter is we were trying to get the Svarim if we could. Yeah, but the fact of the matter is they also forced great censorship and changes in manuscripts. anything that was believed to be a reference to Christians or to Yashik himself, they would enforce a change in the manuscript. So, ironically, the best manuscripts that we have that are being published today usually came from under the time of the Arabs, who were, Islam was much more tolerant in its day than the Christian church ever was. But so far, I don't believe we've invited Osama to the base midrash yet, so I don't think he's been here. Okay, I'll watch the commentator to find out when that will be. Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. Now, so let's look in the Sefer. In the Darkei Moshe here. Look at the first Darkei Moshe, which appears already in Amud Gimel in this new edition. Uva Agur Kasav Lo Ra'isi V'Lo Shemati B'Shum Medina Noagin Sheyiyu Matimin Kfeila Ela Mishari Akol B'Shim Shalkad L'Shono. Right? So he quotes the Sefer Agur. What was the Sefer Agur? Sefer Agur was written by Rabbi Yaakov Landau. Landau was a city in western Germany that not everybody named Landau comes from that city or is from the same Sharsharet. It was a name that a lot of Jews who were kicked out of that city, Polish Jews actually, who were kicked out of that city, adopted. He moved to Italy, and it was in the 15th century, and he put out a book which was also written to his Talmud. If you read the Hakdamah, his Talmud is learning physics and metaphysics. Doesn't have the time to learn Gemara, needs to know the Psak, so he put out a pretty straightforward book with collections of Psak, how we do things. And he, at the end of that book, he had a little section called Sefer Chazon, which is a bunch of riddles, halachic riddles. It was so good that it was published separately as a separate book. The Sefer Agur was published again by Hirschler in 1960. That's the edition I have. I don't know if there's a later edition. Okay, but in any case, the Sefer Agur just has very important information about the 14th and 15th century German Rabbanim and Piskei Din. It doesn't bring Gemaras, it doesn't bring Shakla Batari, it just brings Psak. It was very highly regarded by the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, so they quote from it. And here he says that the Agur wrote, "I've never heard of anybody relying on non-Jewish tasting. We go totally by Shishim." That's a big difference. It would be unlikely to find that kind of a thing in the Beis Yosef, that a call to precedent, right? The other thing about it is to remember that you'll find much more extreme notions of non-Jews among Ashkenazic poskim than you will among Sephardic poskim, and that'll come into play here as well. You will find generally that, in my own mind, the Sephardic Rishonim are the most rational and best and most careful readers of the Gemara, and I at one time contemplated converting to Svardi, but discovered Elul and quickly put it out of my mind. Okay. Kitniot would be good, the style of learning would be great, I like the music, but you know, Slichos, whole month of Elul, can't do it. Okay. All right, so anyway, yes.
Svardim are also generally read it using straight text. And
yes.
Ashkenazim are bringing in some other sources which Svardim would never.
Extra halachic sources and yeah. Whatever. I don't think the Svardic community could have ever produced, the classical Svardic community could have produced the Sefer Hasidim. I think that's very much an Ashkenazic, pietistic, you know, type Sefer. Okay? Now.
Do you think that the Rush is doing the Gemara what the Rish is trying to do, just incorporating the Balanthus?
Yes. In a word, yes. Okay? All right? I think you're right. Okay? Now, so let's see how we poskin. Let's go right to Seif Beis in Tom Kikar. Because I'm trying to get out foundational principles here. Okay? Mim Bimino and Tom Kikar were our foundational principles. Bitul Barov and Tom Kikar. Sorry, Bitul Barov and Tom Kikar. So let's see how we poskin. All right? So, as a matter of fact, we're going to go to Mechaber. And for next time, by the way, I'd like you to have done as much of just the Mechaber and the Ramah and Shach and Tazpur, as much of Tzadi Ches as you can accomplish. This year I'm going to do something that I haven't done in the past. I'm going to require that everybody has read through every Siman of the Shulchan Aruch that we do. Okay? At least that. Okay? Last year, there were, over the years, the people that know this the best are people that have Chabrus and go through all Torah Beis Yosef, all Mechaber, Shach, and Taz, right? They're the ones that usually know this the best. They look up every Gemara and whatever. But I want to do as a minimum, there are other more limited ways that you can follow along with the Shirim. As a minimum, I want to know that everybody read through the Shulchan Aruch, Mechaber, Ramah, Shach, and Taz. Okay? So let's look at Se'if Beis here, if we can, and tease out what the halacha is here. Okay? Hamatchil b'mitzvah omrim lo gemar. So you already daven Shacharis, Yoel, you can continue with Musa.
Where in?
Seif Bet, it's on Amud.
In the
Mechaber, yeah. It's on Amud Vav. Everybody okay? All right? Everybody okay with me? So we'd stop all the time and field questions, or if you get off the track or I said something incredibly offensive and you want to stop me, please do. Okay, go ahead. So what are we always going to do to clarify in a halachic text? Are we going to sit and have a hakira as to whether something's d'oraisa or d'rabbanan? No. Whenever we want to get to d'oraisa or d'rabbanan, we're going to present a halachic situation of suffix. And that's going to be the way, through application, that we pronounce the principles. You will find generally, if you learn a lot of Shulchan Aruch as I do, you will find generally that the first siman or the first two simanim in any topic presents foundational principles. But generally, those foundational principles are presented in a halachic context. So what is he after right now? What's the araisa and what's the rabbanan? How does he present it? In a halachic case. What's the case? Suffek. Okay? So what's the suffek? You want to take a crack at it, explaining? You have the pot. You had Isur come into it. You got to figure out the shear. But it was... You didn't spill it out intentionally, because that would be a question of Eim Evaklin Isur L'Hadchila, which we're going to see in the next Siman. It's not appropriate. But the Nishpach passively. It was Nishpach, what's Be'inyan? In such a way, She'ein Yecholin Lamod Alav. In such a way that you can no longer calculate what the original proportions were. Okay?
Okay. So then he says, but if you know that the majority was that there as Mitzara, and if the majority was us to do
it. But you skipped one. The first case that he starts out, yes. Okay, yes, sorry. No, you're right. Started out with the first case, yeah. Is that? What's the second one?
If you didn't know.
And what's the case that he's dealing with, though? A very limited case. Min b'mino. So what do we see from that? If it was nishbach in such a way that it was spilled out, the shach and sif kut and vav will lay out all the shitos for us and tell us exactly how it works. But what is essentially happening here, this is his way of saying that min ha-Torah, min b'mino is batel barov. And we said is what we said is that even though we hold Tam ki ikar mina Torah, we're going to hold it as a contrary, not contradictory principle. Remember that Rashi held it to be contradictory. So Rashi, in the diuk that I read with you, Didion Rashi, before you guys got here, the diuk that we did last time, Rashi said that one of the ways that I can see that Tam ki ikar mina Rabbanan is because it says Acharei Rabim Lahatos, which seems to say unqualifiedly Acharei Rabim Lahatos. Bein min b'mino, bein min b'shein omino. Therefore, it must be that Tam Kikar is only d'rabbanan. Come along, the Shulchan Aruch and Rishonim, following in the Rashba and following Rabbeinu Tam, and we hold that it's not a contradictory principle, but Acharei Rabim Lahatos pertains, and Tam Kikar pertains. Tam Kikar is an add-on. Where we have a case of Tam, then we have to worry about Tam Kikar. Where we don't have a taste of Tam, then we only have to worry about Rove. What in the case of Min Bimino, we only have to worry about Rov, Mina Torah, and therefore Batel B'Rov. So the Mechaber's way of establishing the foundational principle is to bring a halachic case rather than to launch into a hakira of whether or not it's Mina Torah or Mid Rabbanan. Rof Anecha Lo Filalti. How are you? I lost contact with you in the summer, didn't I?
Yeah.
I was in contact with you up until you disappeared. I assumed you had made Aliyah or went to Tzahal or something. Right, okay. But I'm not going to be able to stay today, so can you catch up with me? Call. Okay, all right, because I'm well, let's take a little break for 2 seconds. So, yeah. I don't need you to sit here. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I'm not supposed to wear halal by the price of the barrels.
Yeah.
And so he basically wants me to finish my off with smicha first.
Okay.
So obviously that includes every day. So I was just wondering if you still happen to have my time with this.
Sure do.
Can I get them back maybe Tuesday for a
group? Yeah, you can. Or if I didn't put them in the office, I probably still have them. Did you send them to me electronically?
No, I gave them, it was like...
Oh, so I'm going to have to look. I'm going to have to look. Because I'm moving offices now, so I don't know where anything is. It's probably in boxes. But I can give you an authoritative set of answers for you to review with, if you'd like.
Okay, that's fine.
What do you have to do? What do you still have to do?
Well, I mean, I wrote up all the questions already.
Right.
I just have to sit down and have, you know...
Is it just Tarovas?
No.
Okay, so let's just finish it up quickly. When do you want to be in the Dionysus Bowl? Starting when?
Well, as soon as possible.
Okay, so it's a very good thing to do. You know, it's not very organized, but it's a very good thing to do. The material's very good to do.
Okay. Well, what do you feel in terms of your program?
It's not a reality yet. So go
next year.
Go where the reality is.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. So I'm gonna have to look. Okay. Give me a call. I'm gonna look. Okay. Or send me an email and I'll respond to you.
Okay.
Okay. Good. Sorry, everybody. I'll give you an unqualified, strong recommendation for that too to him if you'd like me to do that. Okay. It could, actually. Okay. Yes.
I'm trying to make her listen to the previous hearing, but doesn't Rashi also have to distinguish worship in the Dean of Chanami now? And talk about some of the figures together because.
Yeah, but Rashi holds like Rabbi Yehuda, that Mimino Lobatia.
Right, for that reason.
Right.
You know, Mimino is going to be part of the rice, though, it's not figured for a month. He distinguishes the promise.
Right, but he's going to say then that really then Akrei Rabbim Lahatos doesn't apply at all to Mim Bimino, therefore it'll have no impact on Tam Ki Ikar. So Mim Bimino is only then in unlike items. Alright, so is that okay? Yeah, okay. Now, so let's look at just at Sif Kut and Vav, because I want to make a point in Sif Kut and Vav. So let's look at the shot and see if cut and buff. And then I think we're going to break. Okay? So I really want to read this whole thing here. I don't think so. Let me just see where... Okay, let me summarize a point for you in Sif Kut and Vav, which you'll find yourselves. But let me summarize it for you, because it's a lot to read, okay? The Shach writes, "Dekevan shenosein ha'isur ta'am beheter, nepach ha'heter kulo lios isur, va'asur kulo midoraisa." When the isur gives off ta'am in the heter becomes Kulo Iser. I would be inclined to say, because from the fact that he doesn't spell out anything like Rabbeinu Chaim, I would be inclined to say that the Shach holds like Rabbeinu Tam as cited by the Rush. Namely, that even if it's just Tam entirely, it's Usur Midiraisa, and Lokina love the Kezayis, that there's no requirement that there actually be Kezayis b'chdei achilas pras, any kind of a shear be'ain. Even if it's just Tam Lechud, I would be inclined to say that the Shach here, because he doesn't mention anything, I would say that the Shach holds that also is the Araisa. You would be well served, however, to look at Hagon Rabbeinu Akiva Eger here, who disagrees with my take on the Shach. Most people agree with my take on the Shach, okay? All right, now, our topic for next time is the Gemara on Tzadi Zayin Amud Aleph, which we already did, about Kfeila, and then the Shita of Rashi in Kfeila versus the Shita of Tosus in Kfeila, and then all the things that wind up from that difference, okay? Lemaskana lehalacha. So we're going to do Kfeila and the tasting of a non-Jew next time, then after that, we're going to do, I'd like you to look at two sugyas. Remember, you get credit for chulin here, so I want you to look at two sugyas, neither of which is in chulin. But there'll be background for the notion of edus and the notion of hashgacha. And there'll be background for you. One is Baba Kama, Kuf Yadalet Amud Aleph, and Yevamos Kuf Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph. Yes. Kuf Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph. You see in Edus Isha, and you know, you should have the sugya background. The Shach and Taz's question and answer on the practice of a kfeilo, or relying on a non-Jew, Mesich Lefi Tumo, is not as much of a question if you don't know it from the context of the Gemara. But when you know the sugya, then it will leap out at you what the actual kasha is. I hope to finish through Se'ifim Aleph through Tes by the end of the time, by the end of Sunday, and to be proceeding to, on the following Wednesday, Siman Tzadi Tes, which will follow on the first Siman in that other principle of Sidur, because it's a feature of the Sugya of Zroa B'Shela, which figured in the first Siman. So that's the principle that the Torah will follow. I fielded some questions from people over the web on the Shari Yosher. I didn't think that any of the questions were... Usually I share the questions anonymously with everybody, but I didn't think that anything... I thought it was pretty clear from the nods last time in the Shari Yosher. If you have anything specific you want to go over in the Shari Yosher or any of this stuff, please you know, contact me directly by email or call me on my cell phone. I'll repeat my cell phone again. It's 201-993-6600. If I can't answer, I'll either put it on mute or I'll let it go to voicemail. And but I will call you back, okay, as quickly as I can. All times are equally good or bad. I don't use the phone on Shabbos, so don't call me then. It's what I was going to say. What else did I want to point out? Yeah, I'm going to give out some questions on Sunday already, so you can start answering questions if you'd like. On what we've learned so far, you write up the answers to the questions, you basically have your bechina. You can just study, right? Okay? No guessing games as to what I'm going to ask. No guessing games, okay? I will give you Maisalach to look at, see if you can figure them out. And, you know, we'll do a lot of looking and passing shilas and things of that sort. So please make sure to bring the tour, Shulchan Aruch and Chulin on Sunday, and I wish everybody good Shabbos.